famous Rashis in Shlach, but some of the lesser known Rashis. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Mekoshesh. So things are looking pretty bleak in the Machane, and everyone's in disarray, and everyone's dying. And on top of that, someone is Mechallel Shabbos, and they don't know how to deal with it, so they put him in prison, and ultimately he receives the death penalty. So if you look in Rashi, and Rashi's playing off of the introduction to the story, when the story's introduced, good morning, Avi, by you, B'nai Yisrael Bamidbar, the Jewish people in the desert. Well, we know they're in the desert. It's pretty clear. And they're going to be in the desert for many... Come on, Sean. They're going to be in the desert for many years. So why is this introduction? It sounds redundant. By you, Bamidbar. By you, B'nai Yisrael Bamidbar. So, not on that pasuk. On that pasuk, Rashi quotes the Gemara in Krisus, that this really didn't take place in Shlach. This didn't take place in year two, around Tisha B'Av time of year two. The story about the Mekoshesh Eitzim took place year one, right after the first Shabbos. This was their second Shabbos. Their first Shabbos was somewhere in either Alush or Mara, sometime before Har Sinai. Or maybe this is the second Shabbos after Har Sinai. It's not clear from the Gemara in Krisus which second Shabbos this was, but it was the second Shabbos in history. And therefore, this section is out of order. Ein Mukdim Ucher Batar. This section should have been written someplace in Bishalach. So the question is, well, if it happened chronologically in Bishalach, according to Rashi, according to the Gemara in Krisus, why is the Torah textually included here? Anytime you have a disjointed text chronologically, well, why? What's the literary message of placing the Mekoshesh here? So there's a lot to talk about, so much that even made a list. There are a lot of reasons the Mekoshesh are here. First of all, this is a setup. Because this is setting up Parshas Pinchas. What's going to happen in Parshas Pinchas? The daughters of the Mekoshesh, according to many Shittos, will come and say, our father was not a Merakel, and we deserve land in Eretz Yisrael. Who are those famous daughters of the Mekoshesh? The daughters of Tzlafchad. According to one day in the Gemara Bava Basra, the daughters of Tzlafchad were the... Tzlafchad was the Mekoshesh. So if they were the daughters of the Meraglim, they would have lost their share in certain ways. But if the daughters of Tzlafchad, our father was not a Meragel, we deserve to have his share. Avinu lo haya. Our father was very different. Now, why is this setup important? Because this is a ray of hope in a very dark parsha. It's a very dark parsha. People who could care less about Eretz Yisrael, people who want the safety of living. And there's going to be one group of people in the end of Sefer Bamidbar who are going to be very dedicated to Eretz Yisrael. It's 40 years later the story happens, but at least Pinchas is 40 years later. It's after Shlach. Shlach is still year two. But the Torah is inserting at least the story of their father, because this is going to, Mirat Hashem, lead to their championing Eretz Yisrael and Mirat Hashem and Parshas Pinchas. So it's a nice way just to create, there's a lot of rays of hope in the end of Parshas Shlach. For example, the story about the Nesachim. Ki tavo al aretz, when you come into the land, bring these korbanos. Rashi says, by the way, you're still going into the land, don't worry. One day it will happen. It's been delayed, it's been deferred, but it will happen. Okay. So that's one reason the Mekoshesh is placed here out of order. Second reason the Mekoshesh is placed here out of order is there's a lot of attention paid to how to kill him. They know he's a Mechallel Shabbos, they know he deserves death, they're just not sure which type of Mises based him. You know what? No one's watching. Just kill him. It's not a big deal. Kill him this way, kill him that way. Obviously we want to try to keep halacha, but why am I making it so humorous? I'm trying to be humorous. Is because if you juxtapose all the death in Parsha Shlach, and there's a lot of death, there's a magefa, and then there's a lot of goriness. It's a rated R Parsha. Your bodies are going to fall in the desert. You blew pigrechen. There's a lot of dead bodies around. And the death was not so great. Rashi says that their tongues fell out of their mouth and attached themselves to their belly buttons. And I talked last year why the belly buttons, and the belly button became full of voice. It's not a fun Parsha. It's a lot of death. There's a plague. It's a black plague. Millions, the hundreds of thousands of Jews are dying, and they're going to die for 40 years. In that context, it becomes a little bit more difficult to respect the value of one life. Anytime people become numbers, statistics, warfare, epidemics, say, okay, another person will die because you have to crunch the numbers, and you know people are going to die. It's a really hard part of leadership and being in the armies. You know that anytime you enter battle, there's going to be, based on statistics, X amount of casualties. When we went to war 2 weeks ago, unfortunately we knew. We tried our best and we tried our hardest, but we knew that there will be some casualties. So in that context, it's hard to preserve the dignity of human life. And the Mekoshesh shows that even in that context, it wasn't historically the same time. But if you're reading the section, you see it juxtaposed, that even when hundreds of thousands of people are dying for 40 years, they're still careful about one life. and they don't just kill him indiscriminately. Oh, he's Mechal Shabbos, let's stone him. Let's burn him. Let's burn him at the stake. Let's find out what the halacha is, put him in jail, keep him for a time, and let's see exactly, if we're taking a life, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu has instructed us to take this life of the Mekoshesh. So there's a contrast, two contrasts, between the Mekoshesh and between the previous story of the Meraglim. Contrast number one is, his children one day will be the anti-villain of the Meraglim. The Meraglim are the villain, they'll be the heroes. Second of all, amidst all this plague and death and suffering, all of a sudden, Am Yisrael is very, very careful about one life. They know he has to die, but they're not just going, okay, let's kill him, who cares? Now, there are a lot of parallels between the Mekoshesh and the Meraglim. What are the parallels? Well, if you stack up the Meraglim and the parsha that comes after the Meraglim and the Mekoshesh, you get the following lineup. Some of you guys like baseball, the lineup. Who bats first, who bats second? Following lineup. You have the value of Eretz Yisrael and the danger of people who mock or scorn Eretz Yisrael. Then there's a section about someone that brings a karban or community that brings a carbon because they didn't perform any of the mitzvahs. And I talked about this earlier this week. What does it mean you didn't perform any of the mitzvahs? So the Ramban has his pshat, but Rashi's pshat, and that's the halachic meaning, is we're talking about someone that's makir, that commits the chet of avodah zarah. There's a special carbon if you commit a chet of avodah zarah. And that's in the intervening section. Because if you deny Eretz Yisrael, it's a theological problem. It's not just where you live. If you deny the importance of Eretz Yisrael, it's like you've served Avodah Zarah. You've denied HaKadosh Baruch Hu's gift of this land to you. And what's another way to deny Hashem in this world? What's another mitzvah that Shekula Keneged Kol HaMitzvos? Shabbos. So you've got that lineup of Eretz Yisrael, Avodah Zarah, Shabbos. The three biggies. Not the three of Yehareg V'Yavor, but the three mitzvahs that have the deepest theological content. Shechus Damim is not theological. It's theological also. It's not akin, but it's moral. Don't kill someone. Gilui Arayos is theological, but it's primarily moral. Don't cave to your typos. But Eretz Yisrael, Avodah Zarah, and Shabbos are the three theological mitzvahs. And denying Eretz Yisrael is like denying Hashem, is like denying Shabbos, like denying Hashem. And also, these are the three mitzvahs that Am Yisrael will hang on to no matter what happens in history. Most Jews today, not all, but many Jews, especially in Israel, do they wear tzitzis? I don't know. Tefillin, maybe not. Kashrus, not so great, although it's pretty easy to keep kashrus in this country, Baruch Hashem. But if you ask them, do you believe in Hashem? Of course they do. Do you serve Avodah Zarah? Of course not. Most Jews throughout history, one of the great parts of our record is, despite all the challenges we had, we still maintain our monotheism. We still maintain the sense, even there's some Jews today who are atheists, but most Jews are not in that space. Do you believe in God yet? Well, why don't you perform mitzvahs? They're outdated. Hashem doesn't care. I don't have the strength. Whatever their excuse is, but there's a strong attachment to monotheism. We've rarely fallen into Avodah Zarah. Even when the pressure mounted, the amount of Jews who converted to other forms of religion was minimal. So we kept Avodah Zarah. How many millions of Jews today, their only connection to Judaism is Israel? How pivotal has the state of Israel been in creating? Sadly, it's starting to erode because of the politics. But more or less, there are millions of Jews across this globe for whom their primary connection to Judaism is the land of Israel. And of course, Shabbos. No matter how far Jews stray from the orbit, Shabbos always seems to feel some degree, not necessarily keeping Shabbos like the Chafetz Chaim in Mishnah Berurah, not necessarily knowing the Shmir Shabbos Kielchasa, but having a Shabbos meal, lighting a Shabbos candle, making a Shabbos trip, going to the beach, just noticing that this is the day of Shabbos. This is something that they have to keep in some way. They've got to know. So it's not just that these are three theologically deep mitzvahs. These are three mitzvahs that Jews, even after they fail, like the Meraglim is the classic failure, even after we fail to live up to expectations, somehow we're still going to hold on to these three mitzvahs. One other statement that Rashi doesn't make, but it's in the... Well, Rashi doesn't make. Two other statements that Rashi doesn't make. And there's so many reasons the Mekoshesh is inserted here. The Gemara says that had the Jews kept two Shabbosos, then Mashiach would have come. Now they've kept those first two Shabbosos. So basically, they've got two stories that represent the fall of the Jewish people. Had they just entered Eretz Yisrael, Mashiach would have come. Had they just kept two Shabbosos a year earlier, Mashiach would have come. These are the two great falls of the Jewish people. Year one, they didn't keep two Shabbosos. They were right near Utopia. Could you imagine? Would have lived in Utopia, but they failed. A year later, they're 11 days away from Utopia, enter the land, they failed. And it shows us, of course, that redemption isn't just geographical or political. It's not just about living in Israel. You can also redeem the world by keeping Tisha B'Av. You can live in Venice Beach and keep, if every Jew would keep Tisha B'Av, Mashiach would come, and then, of course, we'd go back to Israel. But the enabler, the catalyst, won't be coming back to Israel. The catalyst would be keeping Tisha B'Av. Then, of course, redemption of man would mean we'd end up back in Eretz Israel. The Gemara says, this is not in Rashi, that Mekoshesh was Mischavein L'Shem Shemayim, to show Yisrael how severe Shabbos was, how severe Chilul Shabbos is. Now, that's another reason that it's placed here in this section. Because you would have thought, okay, we failed Hashem. We didn't come into Eretz Yisrael. Hashem banished us for 40 years, and 2,000 years later in history, it's all over. Rip it up. Hashem could care less. We're free. Let's just go off. And Hashem says, no. The relationship has been ruptured. There's a problem in the relationship. But the bris still exists. You're still my people. And what's the cornerstone of the bris? Shabbos. So in this respect, the Mekoshesh was historically, now according to Gemara, historically it happened a year earlier. But when you read the story is that someone stresses that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still intact. And what's the best, worst way to stress that? To be Mechal Shabbos. L'Shem Shemayim. It's a terrible thing. Had he asked me, we said, no, don't do that. Learn some Gemara. You know, give some tzedakah. Find a different way to show that that's a faulty expression. But the purpose of the Mekoshesh is to say that after Eretz Yisrael, and after you scorned and mocked, and now you're in Galus, okay, but you still have Chiv Shabbos. Hashem is still there. You still have Osi B'nir B'nei Yisrael. Hashem B'nei Yisrael, Osi Shabbos, Osi Shabbos, Dor Hashem B'nei Yisrael. So there are 6 or 7 reasons that the Mekoshesh, which happened a year earlier, is implanted into the story. Okay? Well, I have 4 more Rashis to talk about. I'll only talk about 1 more quick Rashi. Okay? In the beginning of the parsha, really interesting Rashi. No, seriously. They arrive at Chevron, the only city that's described as Chevron. Come on, guys, what's the question? What happened to Yerushalayim? If you're discussing where would the Meraglim want to go? What's on the first hit list? Like when you come to Israel, where do you go first? Go to Yerushalayim. You go to Beis HaMikdash. That's the place that should be scouting out. It's a Makom HaKeda. It's where Yaakov slept. Nothing. Nothing's there. The Torah puts Yerushalayim into radio silence. Not even mentioned in the Torah. The word Yerushalayim doesn't appear in the Torah. It appears in the Tanakh, doesn't appear in the Torah. So first of all, the stress on Chevron, sometimes when the Torah says something, you have to read, well, what does it doesn't say? What does it not say? It doesn't talk about Yerushalayim because Hashem wants us to find Yerushalayim. There's no telegraphing of Yerushalayim. We have to find Hashem. Hashem is in handing Yerushalayim to us. Chevron is a different story. Okay, so what does the Torah say about Chevron? Very interesting. Again, chronology. Chevron was built 7 years before Tzoan in Mitzrayim was built. The Chevron, Sheva Shanim Nivnasa Lefnei Tzoan Mitzrayim. So Rashi says, that's not true. So look up the history books. Rashi's going to Medrash. Look up the history books. We're in Sota. It's not true. And how does Rashi know it's not true? Because Cham, son of Noach, had 2 children. One of his children was Mitzrayim. One of his children was none other than Mr. Canaan. Mitzrayim was an older child than Canaan. If you're a father, you're going to build a city or a palace for your younger son, Canaan, before you build for your older son, Mitzrayim. So Tzoan, the palace of Mitzrayim, was built way, way, way before Chevron, the palace for Canaan. So what does it mean, really, Rashi says? It just means the quality of Chevron was superior to the quality of Tzoan. Nivnasa Lefnei means it was built in a better quality, and it's a Kal V'chomer, because Chevron isn't exactly the most lush land in Israel. You've been to Chevron. It's stony, it's rocky, and so on. It's a beautiful garden-like pavilion in Mitzrayim. So even Chevron, which is a graveyard, is superior to Mitzrayim, which is keeping consistent with the report. They saw the grapes, they saw how beautiful, Eretz Avos Chalav V'Dvash, it's a beautiful land. So the question again is, if the real meaning is not about chronology, what was built first, the real meaning is quality and caliber, why does the Torah describe it that way? Again, you look up the history books, when was Tzoan built? In the year, 1000. And when was, it's obviously later, 1500, whatever. When was Chevron built? 1507, whatever, after the 1666, the Mabul, whatever. But why is the Torah presenting it this way? It's a lie. The Torah's lying to you. According to Rashi. It means something. It's not lying, it means something else. But why does the Torah describe it historically? What's the purpose of this pasuk? Always, whenever Rashi moves away from the pshat, okay, so that's what the Torah's message is. But why does the Torah then encase it that way? Why doesn't the Torah just come out and say that Chevron's a better place to be? Chevron had nicer swimming pools. Chevron had better pizza shops and so on and so on. Why does the Torah cast it as if it's which was built first? The answer is as follows. Mitzrayim was the cradle of a civilization. So on, as the pasuk in Yeshaya says that Rashi quotes, was the capital. Not the capital, it was where the kings went for luxury. It was the state of the kings. It was the palaces of the kings. It's the pasuk in Yeshaya, Perek Lamed. So Tzoan represented the fact that Mitzrayim was built up, was civilized, had governments, had leadership. It was not just some flash in the pan bunch of tribesmen and herdsmen that got together and put up some tents. And we know that Mitzrayim was an empire. Empire was the indomitable ruler of the entire, and we see it in the end of Bereishis. So in Mitzrayim, that's what we would call ancient civilization. It'd be the equivalent of New York City or London or major town, major cities today. That's what Mitzrayim was, and so on was the playground for all these monarchs, or at least where they had their palaces, seat of diplomacy, seat of monarchy. We don't really know what the capital of Mitzrayim was. We know the Jews built Pithom and Ramses, but so on was where somehow Paro lived or operated or the monarchs resided. And you should know the Torah says that Chevron was even more established and had even more culture, civilization, settlement, political structure. You're comparing Chevron and so on. Keep in mind, so on, we don't really know what so on is. If you're asking me to compare Chevron to another Egyptian city, what would you say? Pithom and Ramses. It's the only city the Jews knew, maybe Sukkot, maybe Goshen. So if you're talking to the Jews and you want a point of reference, you should say, by the way, you remember Goshen? Chevron is better than Goshen. Or Chevron, so on is chosen because it was the seat of politics, where the kings resided, based on the pasuk in Yeshaya. And the Torah is saying, by the way, Chevron had even more lineage, more political heritage, more White Houses, more capitals, more parliaments, more people there. And by the way, if you're paying attention to the pasuk, this is exactly what the pasuk says. Who lived there? Achiman, Sheshai, Talmai, Yehudei Hanak, important people, significant people. Again, Rashi, Medrash says who the people maybe with the four giants, but these are people who were known. If you're saying their names, then you expect the person in those days to know who these names were. And now they're saying Tom, Dick, and Harry. The people who are very, very famous. What's the purpose of saying it this way? What's the purpose of comparing Chevron to Tzoan? Chevron was established politically, culturally, and civilizationally 7 years before Tzoan. Wink, wink, it really wasn't, but it's an exaggeration. It was so established, it was built even before Tzoan. Historically, it wasn't. But the Torah is creating an exaggeration to create a message. Well, you know what? You would think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu offers the land to the Jewish people. It's empty and waiting for them. Surprise, there are people living there. Surprise, they don't want to leave so quickly. Surprise, they've built their own establishment, their own cities, their own political structures, their own capitals, their own, like Tzoan, remember? You saw Tzoan, right? Tzoan was the epitome of a political center, the epitome of a cultural center where people lived and kings ruled and the entire government emanated from Tzoan. You know what was like Tzoan? You know what was even more Tzoan than Tzoan? Wink, wink. No, it wasn't really. Chevron. And that's our challenge. You know, we think that Hashem promises a land, and you know, if I promise you a room in yeshiva and you come, oh, by the way, there's someone in your room, you're expecting to come and have a room. And, oh, by the way, someone's sleeping there, you got to fight it out. you got to work it out. You take the bed one day. It doesn't, history is all cyclical. And when you read Tanakh the right way, and you read Rashi the right way, even Rashi the right way, you just see the same, and that's part of our challenge. Hashem is, part of the challenge is faith, part of the challenge is fear. Part of the challenge is also navigating the fact that there are people there, and how do you, you know, just disrespect the people that are there, that they're building lives. And obviously during the days of Yeshua, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a specific tzivu because they were of the Avodah Zarah at a specific point in time, but it's creating a model and a template that we live through today. Okay, so two Rashis. One Rashi, nothing Rashi says, but based on Rashi says we have to do a lot of thinking. Mekoshesh doesn't happen in Shlach. It happens in Bishlach, Bishalach. So if it happens in Bishlach, not in Shlach, Bishalach and Shlach, why is it relocated here textually? Second of all, Chevron was built before Tzoan. That's not true. Tzoan was built before Chevron, Rashi says. So Rashi's pshat is, well, it's just talking about the caliber. It was fertile. It was lush. Okay, but why does the Torah not say that? Let the Torah just say Chevron is a better place to live. Why is the Torah comparing Chevron to Tzoan? We don't know about Tzoan. answer is Sun was the most built-up, established part of Egyptian civilization. Now, it's symbolic, iconic of monarchy, politics, and civilization. And Hebron has that same feel to it. And that's what we're discovering. It's not a land that's just ready and open and vacancy, you know, for people to live. It's part of the challenge to move to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So 2 out of 5 is not bad. We got there.